Bullshit echo. Bullshit. Hello? Hello? Okay.
See, I hear that.
You hear that, but there's no echo. There is no echo, right, on your end?
No.
Okay, so I swear to God, one day I'm going to get this right, and it's going to be a fucking miracle and a half.
Part-time sad boy.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and Ian is not here this week, and in his stead is our pal Corey Blake. He is a blogger at coreyblake.com and at comicsobserver.com. Comics Observer with an S, right, Corey?
That's right.
Okay. For the third time, Christian. For anyone who doesn't...
still right.
For anyone who doesn't know, this is the third goddamn time we've recorded, well, actually the second time we've recorded this podcast. We recorded the most awesome podcast in the universe about 5 days ago, and for some reason the file just got screwed up, and we had to start all over. So this week we are delving into the Avengers comics, not the movie. Corey and I have seen the movie, but Paul has not. So we are, and we're probably going to try and do another podcast before the weekend is through to discuss our feelings on the Avengers movie. But we wanted to record something for people who are going to go see the movie or have not or are planning to go see the movie. That's the same thing, what I just said right there. But and have not read or many Avengers comics and want to actually read the books from whence they came. So, right?
It's like Avengers, the highlights.
Yeah, the highlights of some of the better Avengers. And the Avengers have been around for how many years is it now, 50?
It's 1963, I think, so
Jesus.
Somebody got a calculator.
Close to 50 years. And, you know, there's so many storylines throughout the years, but there's some big ones that stick out and some milestones, and we just wanted to discuss them. So anybody who was interested in checking out actual Avengers comic books, which would hopefully be many of them, many of the people out there will check them out. And I guess we just get started off with the... You know, the big one, right? Avengers number one.
Start at the very beginning, because I hear it's a very good place to start.
Begin at the beginning. Yes. So we'll start with the Avengers number one, which is by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, although you wouldn't know that Jack Kirby was involved these days, but, you know, I'm not going to get into that. And I recently read the reprint of Avengers number one and really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fantastic little book. The gist of the story is that Loki has been imprisoned in Asgard, Loki from the Thor movie, Thor's half-brother. And he's imprisoned in Asgard, and he's scheming against his brother Thor. And the best plan that he can come up with is to try and draw Thor out of hiding, or out of his secret identity. Back in those days, he had a secret identity, which he does not have in the movie. Thor would hide as, or would be Donald Blake, right? Correct?
That's right.
Dr. Donald Blake.
Dr. Donald Blake, yes.
My father.
Your father, exactly. Related by blood. Corey, there's something you're not telling us.
He's a demigod.
Nice.
I don't like to rub it in.
We're so not up to your standards, Corey. We're just mere mortals here at Part-Time Fanboy. But he's trying to draw Thor out, and the way he does it is by tricking the Hulk into smashing a bridge that a train is about to ride over, and he does that by making an illusion of dynamite over the tracks, and the Hulk in mid-leap changes his trajectory and because the dynamite disappears at the last minute, he misjudges his leap and smashes the bridge by accident. And despite the fact that he actually tries to fix the bridge and saves the train, the people who witnessed the accident, the damaging of the bridge, claim that the Hulk tried to kill them all.
Oh, he's so misunderstood.
He is. Yes. Bling, 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 bling. But basically word gets out that the Hulk tried to smash a train, but only to Rick Jones and his Teen Brigade, which is the group that he hangs out with back then. Not a really great name for a gang, but, you know, it'll do. The Teen Brigade reads in the newspaper that the Hulk attacks a train. Apparently the paper doesn't get to New York City, or the story isn't that big enough that the Teen Brigade and Rick Jones have to get on their ham radio to try and contact the Fantastic Four. Loki, in all his mischievousness, redirects the radio signals to a radio in Don Blake's office, and Don Blake figures, I've got to get on that. I got to figure out what to do, as Thor, and changes into Thor with a tap of his cane, and Thor is on his way to deal with the Incredible Hulk. Am I correct so far? Am I doing all right?
This sounds like an accurate summation.
Yes.
It's a very complicated plot.
Yeah. Well, ineffectual villain that Loki happens to be. The radio signal also gets redirected to almost every other current Marvel superhero. And Ant-Man, Iron Man, the Wasp, and they all find out about this as well through the radio signal that was misdirected. And they decide to go find Rick Jones and the Teen Brigade and help them out. It should also be noted the Fantastic Four also gets the signal, but Reed Richards pretty much gives Jones and the Brigade a brush off because he's busy with another case. He doesn't say what that is, but they've got other shit to deal with. And they
he's
can't
got
take
science stuff to do.
Yeah, exactly. They can't handle dealing with the Hulk, a rampaging Hulk right now. So essentially what happens is they all get together, they all, you know, deal with the Hulk, and they find out that Loki was tricking the Hulk, and Hulk wasn't really actually trying to cause any harm, and they have the obligatory superhero fight, and by the end of the book they form as a team. And that is the beginning of the Avengers. And I actually found this, despite my sarcastic tone, to actually be a very fun read. I thought it was a very straightforward adventure story, had a lot of action. The Jack Kirby art is, you know, very well done. Obviously, it's Jack Kirby, so what can you say? And I think that this would be a really good story for kids to read, something that a kid might enjoy. Because, as I said in our previous recording, which no one will ever hear, you know, these comics weren't necessarily made for people in our age group, right? I mean,
it's true, that's right.
Right, right. And it's it's difficult for us to look back at, you know, the days of ham radio and newspapers. I mean,
yeah,
already,
<you know. laughs> how quaint.
Already, things from 5-10 years ago seem so dated to us now that looking back at this, it really is sort of an artifact of a different time and a different kind of storytelling, but it's still very entertaining.
Sure.
One thing that strikes me with these old 60s Stan Lee and Jack Kirby comics is that they really feel like episodes of Saturday morning cartoons, which I don't think were really existing yet.
Or yeah.
At least not in this sort of, not in the way that they sort of plot these issues. And I sometimes wonder if the Saturday morning cartoons that kind of came after the 60s Marvel sort of modeled after this. Because it really does, like, it feels like, you know, the villain of villain of the issue, villain of the week, and just a tight plot, just fun art, you know, fun action, Hulk juggling farm circus animals. I mean, what could go wrong?
And in clown makeup.
In clown makeup.
Yes. While he's hiding out.
Clowns before.
Nice.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point, and your point is even made stronger because of the fact that a lot of these guys actually did, like Alex Toth and Jack Kirby himself, they actually went on to make simple, but they went on to work in the animated industry a couple years after the Marvel cartoons became popular. I mean, Toth, right? That's how you pronounce it. He went on to work for Hanna-Barbera, Space
Awesome.
Ghost, and Birdman, and all that stuff. And
All the way
Jack
up to
Kirby,
Thundar.
Thundar, yeah, awesome. But I mean, Kirby actually helped produce those limited animation Marvel cartoons, right?
That's
That,
right, yeah.
yeah. That I actually watched one with my daughter a long time ago, and it just shows you that it wasn't made for us because to her it was very entertaining and very dramatic. I watched the Hulk one because she was curious about the Hulk. She's seen stuff laying around the house, and she was actually a little scared by it because I think it had the Gorgon back then, who was like a Russian agent, and he had like a big red head or a big pink sort of purple head, and he was jealous of the Hulk, and it kind of it didn't really freak her out, but it she was definitely inching towards the back of the couch a little bit when she was watching it. So these things were not made for you and me, but they definitely had an effect on us when we were younger, and I still think that they would have an effect today, right? On a
I agree.
kid.
Yeah,
Yeah.
oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my first exposure, even before the comic books, were those limited animation TV shows. I got to see those before I really even picked up the comics, and that was actually the thing that drove me to the comics.
Well, yeah, I'm sure a lot of media did. I know the old George Reeves Adventures of Superman, that show. I mean, I'd read Superman comics, but I think it basically solidified my love for that character. But this is a Marvel podcast, no DC
Yeah.
allowed. But anyway, this is a really good read, and you get your money's worth. I mean, back then, I was just very surprised to see how many words there were in the comic,
Yeah.
just how much reading you actually had to do, and compared to today's comics, where.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really funny because I think one of the things that Stan Lee is sort of underrated as, in a lot of ways, is a writer. I mean, that
Yeah.
guy wrote a lot of words for those books.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because, yeah. You're absolutely right, and that's the thing is a lot of it though does tend to be explaining what the character is doing. It's sort of a criticism of the old Super Friends cartoon, which is like, look, the train is coming. I'm going to stop the train with my heat vision. Here I go using my heat vision, or something like that. It's very much that sort of thing, but it's effective. And like you said, Paul, I think the dialogue is very overly dramatic, and it captures your imagination. So that's one thing that Stan Lee was very good at. So in any case, Avengers number one, that's some excellent reading right there, which we will follow up with by reading Avengers number four, which
Actually,
is
America.
can I just make one quick comment before we leave Avengers number one?
Yeah, yeah.
On the cover, if you look at Ant-Man, he's on the backs of two flying ants, but
Yeah.
the ants don't have wings. How are they
Really?
up there?
Maybe they're flapping so fast that
Perhaps.
you can't see the. There's a lot of. I'm looking at the cover right now. There's a lot of speed lines. So
Yeah, or they just
maybe.
jumped
Maybe
and
they.
they're actually plummeting to their death.
Yeah. Oh, and we forgot to mention the inherent chauvinism towards the
Oh,
Wasp.
that's right. That's right.
Yeah. We're basically. Almost every other line out of Ant-Man's mouth might as well be "Shut up,
Pretty much.
bitch." It's just like ridiculous, but yeah. It's like, she's swooning over Thor, and it's like, can't you think of anything but men? It's what's like, wow. But anyway, moving on to Avengers number four, which
Yes.
you and I know as being the first modern day, I guess if you can consider 1961, 62, or whatever, modern day appearance of Captain America since the Golden Age. And this is basically the issue where they find him in a block of ice, frozen in the Arctic wastes or Antarctic. I'm assuming it's, I don't know, one or the other. But Namor finds himself defeated after, I think, a plot with Dr. Doom goes awry. And he finds himself in the Iceland wastes. And he comes across a tribe of Eskimos that are worshiping a figure, a block, frozen in ice. And in his rage against the humans worshiping such a simple figure, he picks up the block of ice and throws it into the water, where it starts to float, and the ice actually starts to melt. And circumstances being what they are, the Avengers in their submarine come across this... man who has been released from the block of ice, and it turns out to be none other than who? Captain America. Captain America. And so this is his first modern day appearance, and I actually remember having read this in the library when I was a kid in some kind of trade paperback that they had, and I loved this story when I was a little kid. And having read it now, I actually still really like it. And I think I mentioned on the last time we tried to record it, like, for me, this this is where Kirby's art really shines, because you could tell that he has a love for the Captain America character. He was probably so excited that he was getting to draw this guy again. And it's action from almost the very beginning, because you have the scene where Namor assaults the Eskimos. That's a good name for a band. Namor assaults the Eskimos. And then, you know, Captain America wakes up and he freaks out. And then the Avengers are like, well, how do we really know you're Captain America? And what do they make him do? They make him prove it by fighting all of them. You know, which is, you know, the best way you would... What was that?
You could just, like, take a test or something, but...
Yeah. Well, they didn't have DNA back then, Corey. Oh, I mean, come on.
I thought maybe a history test.
The best way for him to test himself is to dodge Thor's hammer while it being thrown at him with full force. Come on. That's just the best way. There's no other way. So...
He's dodging it by, like, doing, like, a one-armed pull-up.
Yeah! It's awesome. Dude, yeah. He can do that. He's Captain America. That's so... Right. And the way that he gets stopped is Wasp enlarges herself and, you know, basically talks some sense into him. And they all believe, because of his dramatic, you know, postures and jumping and gymnastics, that he is the real deal Captain America. And then this is also the issue where you find out, to a certain extent, what happened to him at the end of World War II. Because the character hadn't been around for about 20 years. And you see the famous scene where there's sort of like a jet airplane or a drone that has a bomb that's going to cause some damage to, I don't know if he was launching it at New York City or...
America in general.
Just, yeah, oh, he was at America in general, whoever the villain is. And, you know, Bucky... gets on the plane first, and Cap tries to stop him by leaping after him, but he can't do it. The plane blows up, Bucky dies, and Cap falls into the water, the icy depths, to be frozen forever. The interesting to note about this sequence in the Avengers number 4 is that you don't actually ever see what villain it is that that launches the bomb. I think it was eventually explained to be Baron Zemo, not the Red Skull, right? Does anyone remember?
I'm not
that?
Sure, actually.
What's I've seen so many versions of that happening that I've seen it. I think as Zemo, the Red Skull. I mean,
the Impossible Man.
Unbelievable. But yeah, so this is where you find out what happened to Cap, and he shows up in the modern world, and he's walking through the streets, taking it all in, and. You know, the very sort of, I remember this scene from when I very first read it, where he comes across a police officer in the street, and the police officer first starts giving him crap, like, hey, who are you? What are you doing? And then he recognizes the uniform I don't know, as he gets closer, and and you know, he kind
as
of
it
actually
becomes convenient.
Yeah, and he kind of actually pulls out a handkerchief, and he starts weeping a little bit into it. You know, and he's like, "Cap, our fans, we missed you so much. You know, I can't believe that you went missing for all this time." So I think this is a very effective issue. Again, it's action-packed, and anyone who's an Avengers fan or a Captain America fan in any way, shape, or form has probably already read this. But if you haven't, seek it out. I believe it's on Comicology, as is Avengers number one. Comicsology. Sorry, but this is a fantastic read. I enjoyed it. The villain revealed to be an asparagus-headed alien towards the end. I mean, that's just classic 60s right there. And if you take your comics way too seriously, like it seems like a lot of fans do these days, you may not enjoy this. But I think it's fantastic. And again, I think it would be a really great read for kids. You know, all the Avengers are in it. Iron Man even tackles Namor for a little bit again. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So definitely check that out if you get a chance.
Yep.
So from here, we would leap to what? The Kree-Skrull War?
Sure.
Is that where we should head to?
Well, I wanted to mention briefly Avengers number 16.
Oh, yeah.
Which is The Old Order Changeth. It's the first time the Avengers roster gets completely overhauled, which later becomes sort of a tradition. And all of the founders are jettisoned for new members, except for Captain America stays, although technically not a founder. Captain America stays, and he is leading a team of supervillains who are trying to reform. And those characters include Hawkeye, who's in the Avengers movie, and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, two siblings from the X-Men that were Magneto's Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. So, that was kind of a big deal at the time. No super team had sort of completely dumped their cast and replaced it with villains. And I've read sort of reactions to that from that period, and people were just flipping out. They're just like, how could you do that? You know, if there were an internet, it would have exploded.
Yeah. So I mean, the team at that time was like Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, Captain America. Anyone else was it in there?
I think that was it. They were called the Kooky Quartet. Was kind of their nickname. Cap's Kooky Quartet.
Yeah. I see. I definitely remember reading that too. Probably in one of the same trades I read that Captain America issue. Probably. And I remember there being in the book people saying like, well, how can this be? Aren't they villains? Aren't they, you know, right. And Captain America sort of being very much confident that he could keep them in line. He was, you know, and they've proven themselves, and, you know, and I mean, it just goes to show you that how different Marvel was at the time, that they would actually take some sort of established villains and put them in the forefront as heroes, you know?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, some really good thinking there. I mean, DC definitely wasn't doing that. So,
well, Stan Lee, you know, I assume anyway, Stan Lee was in the beginning not afraid to progress characters forward. Like in the first year of the X-Men, they graduated from the school.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Spider-Man, he graduated from high school, went into college. You know, now, I mean, if those same comics started now, they would, you know, that would be the status quo, and that would be it. You know, they're in school forever.
It's like they would just sell someone's soul to the devil in order to keep a marriage from happening.
That'll never happen.
That'll never happen. Oh, my gosh. Like the less said about that, the better. all right, so let's go to the Kree-Skrull War. And you guys haven't read this yet, right?
Correct. Or
not.
I haven't read it in a long, long, long,
long
time.
But this is basically... was sort of a big deal. Was it a big deal back then? Does anybody know? Or is it just a big deal in like Avengers Marvel history because it happened?
I think it was kind of a I mean, this might have been the first sort of cosmic adventure of the Avengers, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think it was a big deal, yeah.
I believe it may have even been sort of the beginning of the whole sort of cosmic era of Marvel.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah, apparently the Kree-Skrull War goes from Avengers 89 to 97, and I've read most of it, not all of it, but I have a trade, and I actually really enjoyed it. A lot of the art is by some of the art is by Neil Adams, which is just fantastic. You can see how this guy became or was a superstar. I mean, for all the kudos that Kirby gets for pushing the envelope the way he did, Neil Adams must have really been sort of a kick in the pants at Marvel and just in the comic industry in general, because his anatomy is so well done and the characters are so forceful. They look a little more, say, realistic than Jack Kirby, if that can be fairly said. And he does a lot of really great things with panel layouts. And it really makes... There's one issue in particular where Ant-Man has to go inside the Vision to help kind of like reboot him. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in that issue alone. So that's a very good run. And it's a very good highlight to this sort of run of Avengers. But Sal Buscema and John Buscema also contributed to the art, and they are no slackers either. You know, the issues where their art appears is fantastic as well. And this is basically has to deal with two of the major alien races in the Marvel Universe, the Kree and the Skrull, who've been mortal enemies. The Kree mostly dealing with Captain Mar-Vell in his own book, I believe, at the time. And the Skrull had mostly taken part in the Fantastic Four, if I'm not incorrect. I mean, maybe they'd shown up in the Avengers, but I know that in this run, you actually get to meet some of the Skrulls that the Fantastic Four turned into cows, like in the very first Skrull appearance. Yeah.
Which, yeah, that was the first Skrulls, yeah.
Yeah, those were the first Skrulls. And it's just a really cosmic, fun adventure story. It's self-contained to the Avengers. It's not sort of the way it was done, the way it's being done now, where you have to pick up a bajillion books. If you wanted to just read an Avengers adventure, you could read an Avengers adventure, you know, and not have to worry about picking up Captain America or, you know, Thor. It was very self-contained. And I would say, for the most part, it's a really great read. I think the climax at the end, where Rick Jones kind of gets like... I never liked Rick Jones, I have a confession. As a character, he just kind of always bugged the shit out of me. The way that Robin bugs a lot of Batman fans, Rick Jones just bugs the living shit out of me. I don't know why.
It is kind of annoying how he's everywhere.
Yeah, it's not just everywhere. Just kind of like the hip lingo that they try and give him. And,
well, I know he was meant to be sort of the audience stand-in at the time. You know, sure. That was the, you know, he's the young person that they can all relate to. But yeah, he does come off as a big doofus looking back in, in hindsight.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only times he's ever been portrayed somewhat decently was in the Peter David Hulk run. Mm-hmm. In any case, Rick Jones kind of is the one here that kind of develops these like weird cosmic powers, and he kind of saves the day, which is kind of lame. I think it has something to do with the Kree high intelligence, like boosting his evolutionary abilities or boosting him to the top of the human evolutionary ladder, and he manufactures some superheroes from when he was reading comics out of thin air, and he helps the Avengers defeat the Kree or something like that. I hope I didn't spoil it for anyone out there. But regardless of that, it's still a fun read. And again, I think this would be a very cool thing for a kid or even a preteen or a teenager to read if they were curious about the Avengers. It's not grim and gritty, but it's very dramatic. Every issue is especially well drawn, and it's a lot of fun. And you guys should check it out. I mean, it's got all these kooky characters: Ronin the Accuser, the Krull. Hello, the Kree. I combined them. See what I did there? I mixed them. I was mixing races, which they would not have liked. But the Kree High Intelligence is in there, which is just a wacky character in and of itself. And I think this is a really fun read, and I really enjoyed it. So I would highly recommend it, especially anybody who's an Avengers fan has probably already sought this out. But if you haven't, it's a lot of fun. And I mean, even Annihilus is in it, which is pretty freaking cool. I always loved Annihilus. He was just crazy. So yeah, I recommend the Kree Skrull Roar, and you guys should definitely read it. And from there, where should we go? The Hawkeye miniseries, Paul? You wanted to talk about Hawkeye.
Yeah, love Hawkeye mini. The Hawkeye miniseries, as you were saying before, is one of the great 80s comic sort of artifact. It sort of encapsulates like a lot of the really good stuff about 80s Marvel. I actually hold it just right under the Wolverine miniseries myself.
Oh, wow. I actually like this more than the Wolverine miniseries. What about you, Corey?
Well, I've not read a Hawkeye, so I
gasp.
I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
It's sort of the first time that I ever really saw him as something more than like the Green Arrow knockoff. He was very different in this because you know he's a very he's a blue collar kind of guy. He's got a job, you know. He goes into debt buying his rocket cycle. At one point after he's been dumped on and beaten up and you know, just brought really low, I think he ends up with like $97 in his bank account, you know. I mean, it's a superhero who has real world problems.
Yeah, very much so. Almost like Peter Parker, you know. Yeah. And I mean, when he starts out, he's a security guard, right?
Right. He's a security guard for a company that's a rival to Stark Industries.
Yeah. And he, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff in here. I'm actually looking at it right now. And this is Mark Gruenwald all the way.
Right.
He wrote it and he penciled it. And I have to say, even today, I really, really like the art. And there's a lot of really good stuff in here. And like you said, it really portrays him as sort of like an insecure superhero, very insecure of his place. Well, he always was from the beginning, right? In the Avengers, he kind
of... He was he was one of the villains that was brought in. And as such, I don't think that he feels that everyone's ever really trusted him or like buys into his leadership the way they do with somebody like Captain America.
Yeah, Captain America. Yeah, I mean, and like you said, we've said in the last podcast, there's a brilliant scene in here where, well, we should say that, is Mockingbird actually introduced? Is this her first appearance, do you know?
Yes, she was introduced in this miniseries.
Oh, okay, so she had never shown up before in the Marvel Universe, or at least as far as we know.
Yeah, she's introduced as a former S.H.I.E.L.D. operative who's now decided to sort of go solo hero for hire kind of route.
Gotcha. Yeah, and she, you know, and they establish a very good relationship between him and Mockingbird, which eventually ends up in, well, I mean, I won't ruin anything but they eventually get married. And I think this may have been sort of, well, not really. I mean, Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Girl, they got married throughout their relationship. But I don't know. It's just sort of like a very, it's a weird way to describe it, but a very sweet story. Because you've got a guy here who's basically, like you said, working class, very insecure of himself and his place as a hero. And he's sort of like, is not just struggling with his finances or anything.
Oh, he's had horrible relationships for his entire life. The Black Widow, he I guess had a unrequited love for Scarlet Witch. You know, I mean, he's never had a good relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And like, so it ends up being a very sweet story, which is a weird way to explain it or describe it. But I think it's apt. I think by the end of the story, you're kind of like, that was nice, you know?
Yeah, it was. And also, and by the end of the story, it's also a very hard earned end of the story.
Yeah.
You know, not, again, not giving away anything, but he does make a choice in defeating the villain that ends up altering the rest of his life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And it's the first time I'd ever really seen a hero do something that not necessarily, it's not one of those like, well, I've just got to do it or I'm going to die kind of things. He's not saving the world here. He's, you know, just saving the girl he loves and possibly losing his chance of being a superhero.
Yeah. I think you're right. That's brilliant. And I had forgotten about that until I just started leafing through this. That was a very dramatic scene, but the other scene that we should kind of mention, you know, dealing with his insecurity is the whole thing where, what does he do, Paul?
He and Mockingbird are on the subway because they're, you know, they've lost all of their money and they're sort of down on their luck. And while they're on the subway in costume, they run into Steve Rogers in his civilian clothes. And, you know, Steve sort of knows that something's up and, you know, offers his help. But Hawkeye just sort of plays it off and says, no, you know, I've got this. You know, this is my thing. And, you know, he sort of, you know, politely steps up, you know, tells Cap to step off. And it's sort of the first time that he really, you know, asserts himself to Captain America, and you realize like how insecure he's always felt around these, you know, superhero icons.
Yeah. And that's a brilliant scene. I mean, I remember how effective that was when I read it when I was a little kid. I was just like, wow, he's kind of blowing off Captain America. You know, what is he doing? Captain America could help him, but he's kind of stepping on his own foot in a way, but he's kind of got to establish himself as being effective and competent. So this is a great miniseries. I can't recommend it enough. Even today, I think it's fantastic. I'm leafing through it while I'm talking to you guys, and it's just, I love it. I remember I hunted this down when I found out that Hawkeye was going to be in the Avengers movie. And I actually bought off of eBay the actual 4-issue miniseries and the trade. That's how much I liked it. So, nerd. Anyway, so from here we could go on to the Ultimates, which I think is probably the biggest read that anyone's going to want to read if they're going to see the Avengers movie or if they have seen the Avengers movie. Would you guys agree with that or?
Yeah, it's definitely resembles the movie Avengers the most.
Yeah.
I think that sort of big screen epic kind of adventure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see that, and this is Mark Miller and Brian Hitch, and you can see that this is sort of. I mean, I think when it first came out, people were saying, oh, they're doing this because they want to do a movie eventually. I think that was sort of a little bit of the criticism of it. But I think you can see that with this and what the Ultimates is, before we go any further, is basically Marvel around what? The late 90s?
Yeah, 99.
99, 2000.
Yeah, introduced the Ultimate Universe, which was sort of an alternate take on Marvel heroes, kind of modernizing their origins and, you know, putting them in sort of quote-unquote today's world. And this Ultimates miniseries was basically the Avengers, except they were called the Ultimates. And I don't know, I don't even know if they were actually ever called the Ultimates in the series, but it's a different take on all the heroes. And they do as I said the last time we tried to do this, this is honestly one of my favorite comics of of all time. I really love this mini, this, well, it's two books. It's Ultimates Volume 1 and Ultimates Volume 2, and you can get them in hardcover. And I think they came out finally with a huge omnibus edition. I don't know if you can still get that. But this is just a really unique take on the Avengers. I believe that this is my favorite Marvel, one of my favorite kind of comics of all time, just because there were so many interesting things that they did, and so many, and Brian Hitch's art is just so fantastic that, I mean, I think this is almost like a must read when it comes to the Avengers. What do you guys think?
I think so. I mean, this is probably one of the first, one of the earlier contemporary Captain America appearances that really sort of sold me on the character. I always, like, in general, kind of found him a little boring, a little too apple pie. Yes, I know. But but I love the first issue, or I guess if you're buying the graphic novels, the first chapter that focuses on Captain America during World War II. And I just thought that was a fantastic take on the character, and was glad that the Captain America movie took place during that period too. And just I just think it's great. It's solid. It's contemporary. It's fun. I mean, it's a little, you know, I sometimes have issues with Mark Miller where I think he's a little too cutesy with pop culture.
Yeah.
But it's all right, you know. It's not distracting enough to ruin it at all. It's fun. It's a great take on Hulk. There's some unique stuff.
Oh,
with
the way Hulk.
He's great.
Hulk really stole the show for me there, because I mean, this was the first time that I ever really viewed the Hulk as genuinely threatening.
Where you were like, you don't want to mess with the Hulk. I mean, it's really funny, because my favorite, it's so funny how we all have different sort of favorite takes on heroes in this, but, and maybe it's the California liberal in me, I loved the take on Thor. Like, just the fact that he was just kind of this hippie superhero, didn't really want to be involved with the rest of them, kind of saw them as part of the military industrial complex that was trying to take over the world, you know what I mean? And how he, you know, he has to sort of be dragged into the action, and actually ends up getting framed by, well, I don't want to ruin it, but whatever. You know, if you don't know that Loki's got something to do with it by now, you know. So,
doesn't he always?
Yeah, but there's a really amazing sequence where they basically take the fight to Thor, and they're kind of afraid of doing it because they know what his power level is, and it's just a pretty amazing sequence, you know. And there's a whole bunch of really big, powerful moments in the Ultimates.
These two, Mark Miller and Brian Hitch, had worked on The Authority, which was sort of it's sort of considered the first kind of big screen. Or why? I guess they were called the widescreen superhero comics, where they just really pulled out all the stops and was not afraid to just be big. It just felt like a big popcorn summer Hollywood movie,
yeah,
with big action. After The Authority, which got a lot of, you know, acclaim for their work on that, they basically did the same thing with the Avengers with the Ultimates.
Yeah. Well, I mean, The Authority, basically, I mean, you're right. It established. It set things up, going like, you can do this, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Mark Miller did the second volume, right? But oh gosh,
that's right.
Who started
Warren Ellis did the volume.
Yeah, Warren Ellis. Warren Ellis kind of probably we'd have to give the most credit.
And Morrison took a run on it also.
Oh, did he really? I don't remember that. Yeah, but in any case,
you're right. Credit should go to Warren Ellis. That's you're right.
I mean, Warren Ellis kind of like started off that whole sort of thing, saying like, we can do this. And not only that, not only making it sort of like big screen, sort of Michael Bay-ish, you know, sort of superheroes, but kind of introducing the fact that, you know, bringing in the real world, like post 9/11 sort of, you know, feel to it, which is like, yeah, the shit is going down and these superheroes can't ignore it.
And something also too is the fact that it brings in sort of the post-human elements of these of superheroes. I mean, the fact that some of them are moving past the point of even being human at all. Some of the characterizations are just, you know, phenomenal, and that does bleed through into the Ultimates. It's kind of cool to see the Avengers after we've had a history of action movies. You know, that if you, especially if you compare it to Avengers number one, where, you know, you didn't even have the Bond films at that time.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. You know? Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, and there's
there's a whole new, you know, visual vocabulary that's been established since then, and the Ultimates really takes that and like shoves it forward.
Yeah, and there's a lot of big wow moments, especially like you said, like with the Hulk. And my biggest moment is in Volume 2 when the Statue of Liberty goes down. That moment, I just remember being like, oh, fudge. You know, just sitting there looking at that and just being like, did they actually do that? And I'm sure something like that has been done in a comic before, but just Brian Hitch's art and the situation that they set up in Volume 2, just really well done. So I Ultimates, highly recommended, I think, from all three of us. I would go pick that up. But I think from the Ultimates, we can go to what, Corey? The Kurt Busiek?
George Perez? Well, one thing we didn't mention last time, actually, but you mentioned 9/11, and so I want to mention the Kang Dynasty.
Oh.
This is the end of Kurt Busiek's run on the Avengers in 2001, 2002. And George Perez had left, and now it was Alan Davis, and then a little bit later, Kieran Dwyer. And this was a year-plus-long big epic where Kang, who is this time-traveling sort of warlord from the future, comes back and just takes out all the stops and says, that's it, I'm done, I'm winning this time. And he just shows up with a gigantic sword-shaped spaceship and an armada and wins. And then for the next year, it's the Avengers trying to dig out and fight back. But in the middle of this, with just New York and cities all over the world getting decimated, 9/11 happens. Uh-huh. And they didn't back down. I remember there being online debate about whether they should sort of lean back a little bit and sort of pull back on the epic scale of the violence that was happening. Not that it was gory, but just that cities were being, you know, torn apart. And so but they stuck with the plan, as far as I know, and it was a good, you know, it was a good sort of sprawling epic.
Wow, the Kang Dynasty. Yeah, and it looks like, I'm trying to look it up right now and see if it's in trade. Also, cool.
You might have to wait for the Avengers Assemble series of trades or graphic novels that are collecting his whole run, and you might have to. I think.
Hey, Corey, how does Kang relate to Immortus?
I don't totally understand all that, but basically they're the same person, but just in different points of his life.
Yeah, because I was rereading Avengers number 200 the other day, and Immortus figures somewhat into that, and I was trying to figure that. Man, that's a weird issue too. That's the one where Immortus's son gets Ms. Marvel pregnant. With himself.
Oh yeah.
Isn't it the Madonna something or other? It's with Mantis, right?
No, is that Celestial Madonna? No, I think what you're talking about, the Ms. Marvel thing, I think that was like an annual. There's a whole video on that, which is it's considered like one of the most ridiculous things to ever happen in comics.
It is surreal.
Messed up. Yeah. Well, it looks like the Kang Dynasty or the Kang War, the trade is out of print, or it's not. And what were you saying, Corey? That they're coming out with what?
Yeah, they're doing his whole Kurt Busiek's whole run of Avengers. They're doing a series of trade paperbacks called Avengers Assemble.
Oh, really?
And so I think they did him as hardcovers a few years back, and those might be out of print by now too.
Here they are.
But the soft covers are coming out now, and I think that maybe they're up to volume 3 or something.
Yeah, man, they're like $35.
Yeah, but they're a huge run. I mean, it is expensive, but it's
It's 12 to 23, about 12 issues with an annual and Avenger Zero and one rough cut. Oh yeah, man. I might check this out. Yeah, because I have the original issues of, I don't know if I got to the Kang War, but I have the original issues of the run, which includes what was that, the Ultron thing that you were talking about?
Yeah, Ultron Unlimited. Yeah, that was another one that took place right before then. And I think that's like the peak of Kurt Busiek's run that brought a lot of plot threads together, and it's kind of the ultimate Ultron story, I think, which is the cyborg, evil cyborg that Hank Pym, Ant-Man, inadvertently invented.
Yeah.
And they basically destroy, is it an island or some country?
Yeah, it was a country. It was like an Eastern European country. And I'm not even sure that it was a made-up country. I think they might have actually called a real country, like called out. I can't remember, that was some hardcore stuff.
Let's say it's Romania.
Let's just say it's Romania, you know, because nobody from Romania is listening to this. But, you know, that I remember because Ultron to me was always, especially when you read the descriptions, like in the Marvel Universe, the encyclopedia things, where yeah. Ultron, he wanted to destroy all organic matter, right? He wanted to get rid of all organic life. And with that crazy face that he had, with the mouth that was always open, he was always one of the scarier Avengers villains to me. And that run, that storyline just took him up a notch, maybe 10, you know, where he just decimated a whole Eastern European country. And the Avengers... they were having a hard time taking him down, from what I recall.
Yeah, and I don't remember who did the coloring on that, but there was just like red everywhere, and it was just, I mean, you know, it just looks great. George Perez, of course, is a insane artist, and the colorist on that did great too.
It's well, that whole run is just fantastic with Busiek and Perez, and just Busiek. I mean, he's just a great writer. I mean, from Astro City, anyone out there who has not read Astro City, you got to pick that up. It's just a really great take on superheroes. But you know, Busiek, he's just so good at taking the heart of what these characters are and not pissing on them, but adding something new. I mean, you know, it's just so many new writers these days. Well, they're not new. They've been around probably for 10 years, but they so are into deconstructing the superhero. And you've got guys like Busiek and Wade who just seem to really enjoy what superheroes kind of are about and just
they know their history and they love their history too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is sort of their whole run, Busiek and Perez, is very much faithful to what's come before, but it takes it to another place. You know what I mean? It takes it to a place where it's sort of in between classic Avengers and the Ultimates, you know, where you can have a happy middle ground and still respect the fact that they have masks and, you know, they fight in their tights and, you know, whatever. It's superheroes. It is what it is, you know? So,
I think too, what Kurt Busiek succeeds at is, because this is the first Avengers comic that I actually just read month to month. Like, there's stuff that I went back
really?
And picked up or something. But this is the first Avengers comic that I read as it was coming out, and so a lot of the history stuff I didn't really know. And Kurt Busiek, even though he knows the history, he presents it so that you just get it, and you just jump in along for the ride. And he just knows these characters so well that he can have them speak authentically, and you believe that they're the characters. They sound
exactly
uniquely like who they are.
Yeah, they're very distinct. You nailed it on the head. But speaking of Busiek, let's move on to Avengers Forever, which I mean, we've kind of raved about Busiek a lot, but this Avengers Forever is, I mean, I think you said it, Corey, the last time we tried to record this, which is, this is probably not for somebody who is new to the Avengers. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. This is sort of this is an intro 101. This is, you know, you've graduated now, and there are there are footnotes in the back of each chapter, if you get the graphic novel, the trade paperback, to sort of, you know, if you want to kind of learn more. And some of it's okay. It's just they're time traveling and it's crazy and weird. But there is a lot of history packed into it. But it's a great adventure. It's a, you know, ragtag team of Avengers from different points of time are thrown together and they have to, you know, and they just go on an adventure. And there's a great moment. There's a great sort of chapter about Kang. That's probably the best Kang story I've ever read. Not that I've read a ton, but I thought it really got inside his head really well and made me interested in the character. It's a great, and Carlos Pacheco is a great artist.
Carlos Pacheco is another one that makes me want to cry. He's just amazing. I've got this trade out and I'm leafing through it as well. And this is just, I remember hearing about this when it came out and I picked it up in trade because I wanted to wait and prices had kind of started going up on, I was reading a lot of books back then, but I knew that I wanted to read it. And I remember when I finally picked it up, I was just like, this is amazing. It's just so dense and it's so full of, again, this is another book where there's a lot of words. There's a lot of, but it's very different than, say, the early Kirby Lee stuff in that it's not words that are just explaining everything. It's very much things are happening, people are talking, and it's sort of an interdimensional time travel story throughout Avengers history. And I don't know how Busiek, I wouldn't, how do you tackle something like this? I mean, yeah, it's so fantastic. And the thing is I think if you're going in as a new reader to the Avengers, I'm not going to say that this isn't for you because it's a fantastic story. You might just pick it up and be like, wow, this is amazing. And I think it is on its own. Like anyone who is an Avengers fan and a Doctor Who fan would love this. But I think that, you know, this is, like you said, it's for the graduating class of Avengers people who are sort of semi-familiar. But if you're new to it and you want a really good time travel story, an alternate reality story, and this is for you too, because I love that stuff. And that's part of the reason why I just fell in love with Avengers Forever, because when I first read it and now just flipping through it, I mean, you're talking about sort of in the far-flung future where the idea of the Avengers has been manipulated to the fact where they're sort of shock troops for a dictator, like an intergalactic dictator. You know, you've got the Hammer Troopers who are based on Thor, and the Repulsor Troopers based on Iron Man, and the Shieldsmen based on Captain America, and the Microswarm based on Ant-Man. And then you just go from there. Like, how did this happen? How did the Avengers become, the idea of the Avengers become so corrupt? So this is a fantastic read, and, you know, I highly recommend it, and I think Corey does too. I don't know if Paul, have you read it?
I have not read it, but I'm very excited to now.
You should definitely check it out. It's worth the price, worth the purchase price. And so what else? Maybe not last thing, because I think that there's one or two others, but the Young Avengers by Alan Heinberg, who created or wrote on the OC, the TV show, and Jim Chung. This is a fantastic sort of idea, sort of, the Teen Titans of the Avengers, I would say, and that's kind of shortchanging it, because I remember when it was first announced, everyone was freaking out. Oh my goodness, it's the Teen Titans. They're just aping the Teen Titans, and it is and it's not. It's very much taking it in its own direction, and they do a lot of really good effective stuff, and there's really good takes on sort of the teenage versions of older Marvel heroes, and beautifully illustrated by Jim Chung, who's another one of my favorite artists out there. And I think he's still working on stuff. And recently they released a sequel called The Children's Crusade, and I'm dying to pick that up as well. So, I don't know. Young Avengers, high on my list.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too when that came out. It's Marvel doesn't really do a lot of what DC calls legacy heroes, where younger characters take on the mantle of, you know, so there's like three Flashes and, you know, 820 Wonder Women and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
3,000 Green Lanterns and, you know, but Marvel usually
Batman. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the Batman Inc. And with this, with the Young Avengers, there are these kids who decide to just. At the time, I think the Avengers had sort of, as they say, disassembled. They weren't around anymore. There were no Avengers.
Yeah.
So they decided, as you know, the kids decided, well, we'll have to fill in the gap, and so they sort of dress like them and call themselves, you know, name them after the original Avengers, it's cool, it's great, and yes, I love Jim Chung, he's great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got the Patriot. I think Wiccan is the Thor kind of. And Hulkling, which is a female. Oh no, it's another male. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. And then there's a Vision sort of, yeah, and a female Hawkeye. That's what I was getting confused. And sort of is there an Iron Man? I'm flipping.
Yeah,
through.
there is, and he.
Oh, here we go.
Yes, there's an Iron Lad or something like
that. Iron Lad. Yeah. But. Yeah,
I think the Vision, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Vision is actually the original Vision.
Yeah, you're right.
He was thought dead, and they somehow brought him back, but he was all scrambled, so he really didn't. He was basically like a new character, but he.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, you nailed it. You're absolutely right. I remember now. I'm looking through the book, and so yeah, Young Avengers, and then there was one run that you had talked about, Corey, and I had not. The Masters of Evil thing. What was it called?
Yes, yeah. This is called Under Siege or Avengers Under Siege, and what happens? This is like mid to late '80s, and what happens is the Masters of Evil, which are a band of supervillains that have vexed the Avengers over the years in different permutations. And they get together and decide, okay, we're done screwing around, and they kick in the door of the Avengers mansion, and they beat up Jarvis the butler, and they take down Hercules, and so the Avengers have to fight back. So it's I've not read it, but I've heard of it frequently mentioned in people's best of Avengers stories, and it's supposedly a big deal of the time where it was a big, you know, it was a big sort of it's kind of a big deal that the Avengers were threatened, you know, more so than they had been up to that point.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't read that one either, but when I looked it up after you told me about it, that looks really fun and really interesting. Just one of the first cover images, I think, is like Baron Zemo, and very well drawn. And this is a run by I believe Tom Palmer was the inker, and on that run, and he was inking the Avengers for a long time back then. And I just loved his stuff. What was the run called again? It's
Under Siege.
Under Siege. Yeah.
It was Avengers 270 to 277.
Yeah, Under Siege Avengers. Yeah, here you go. Roger Stern is the writer. John Buscema and Tom Palmer. Yeah. And I remember just really loving their style on the Avengers. Who knows? I may have read these and just don't remember it right now. But yeah, there's the cover of the trade, and it's obviously the cover, the hardcover. And you've got, it looks like Baron Zemo holding a giant, I don't know what that is. It's like some kind of crowbar or something, and he's about to assault Captain America, and everyone else is just laid to waste around them. That looks very dramatic. I want to read that. I'm going to have to go through and see. It says Avengers 270 to 277. So, that's cool. So Under Siege. And are there any others that we're forgetting? We're kind of nearing the 1 hour mark.
There are so many, you know, like the Avengers span so many years and so many different characters. It seems like, you know, almost everybody who's in the Marvel Universe has been an Avenger at one time or another.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, go ahead, Corey. You were going to say
no,
something.
I think I was an Avenger at one point.
You lucky stick. Well, you are a demigod, so.
That's true.
But that's the thing. The one, and I don't know if they have this in trade. I don't know what it was called. And I got to look into this, but there was a run where Dr. Druid kind of was the chairman of the Avengers, Dr. Druid. And I did a little bit of reading last week where he kind of manipulated the team into electing him as chairman. So there was something.
Was that Secret Avengers or
no? That's something more recent. I'm talking. This was probably like about the same time as Under Siege or after it, maybe 20 or so issues after. But I remember the ads, and it was like the end of the Avengers, and I think She-Hulk was on the team, and
I remember those ads.
Yeah, do you remember that?
And, yeah,
and
I do.
Yeah, and he was, and you know, this was obviously not the heavy hitters. These were kind of sort of the washed up second stringers that were on. And they obviously, maybe they were playing it off, because I remember there was kind of a JLA run where wasn't Aquaman heading the Avenger? Aquaman heading the JLA, and Vibe and Gypsy and Steel, and they kind of got trounced too. So maybe they were playing off of that. I don't know, but yeah, but I got to find those issues too. I got to go through my collection.
The last thing I have to say about the Avengers is in the back of the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, number 15, the book of weapons paraphernalia, they gave you a paper Avengers Identicard.
Oh yeah,
that you could clip out, and I still have that.
I am so gonna scan that and print it out and get it laminated and put it in my wallet with my picture on it, because I'm a nerd. But all right, so this has been our Avengers Comics podcast. Hopefully this weekend we will try and get together and do a review about the Avengers movie, because I'm going to go see it again.
And I am going to go see it as soon as I can.
Yeah, and Corey, are you going to see it again, or are you just kind of...
I will see it again, or I will face divorce.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing, and I don't want to get too much into it, but I'll just say that I love the hell out of it, so...
It was great. It was great fun.
So anyway, this is Part-Time Fanboy, and thanks for joining us, Corey. Hopefully Ian can join us next time. And this one definitely recorded.
Hey.
Oh, my God.
Hey.
Part-Time Fanboy. Fanboy.com.